Things have changed, and they changed for the wrong reasons. And basically, this sense of complacency, this confirmation bias, this lack of entitle or this false sense of entitlement that we have as people. Hell no, I don't want any part of that, man. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna honor my ancestors, man. They did something right. And so it's time for us to reflect and take a pause, especially as men and women, as mothers and fathers. You know, our consumption model as a nation now is killing kids. I have doctors in the Beef Initiative telling me what they're seeing from kids that are eating food that is based on an adult consumer demand that is stewarded and engineered by an adult consumption model. Put that into your mind and think about that. What do you tell a kid that's 14 years old that has fatty liver disease, and all he's ever done is ate what was given to him by his parents? This is happening across the United States. It's time to wake up.
Hi, and welcome to the Sovereign States of Mind podcast, where we explore personal sovereignty and what it means to reclaim authority over our own lives. This comes in many different shapes and forms, including homesteading, off-grid living, Bitcoin, self-reliance, self-sufficiency, parenting, health, gratitude and mindfulness, and much more. My name is Jordan Erbs, and I'm excited to have you along for the ride as I talk to different people about how we can gain more independence from these state and corporate entities. If you're interested in learning more about me and my life and how my family is becoming more autonomous and sovereign, you can find our YouTube channel. It's called A Family in Paradise, and we document our off-grid living in Hawaii. There are no sponsors for this show, so if you find value in anything here, your tips and donations are appreciated. There are links in the episode notes. You can also stream this episode on the Fountain podcasting app, and that will also help bring exposure to the show as well as send me some satoshis. Another great way to support the show is to head over to www.sovereignstatesofmind.com and subscribe to our newsletter. You have the option to join a premium subscription. You can support the show as well as gain access to a new Telegram group I am starting, so we can bring the discussion to the community and really try to tackle the topics that you, the audience, want to hear. For extra premium subscriptions and content creators, there will also be a subscription option to get access to the two or three highlight clips I make every week of every episode, and you will have the full rights to use those clips as long as you link back to the podcast. They are great for montages, inspirational quotes, and general social content. So if you like what we're working on, I really invite you to check out sovereignstatesofmind.com and join the community in some way, shape, or form. Without further ado, let's get started.
Sovereign States of Mind.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Sovereign States of Mind. Today's episode is a little different than normal. Where are you right now, Slim?
Hey, I'm up here on the Llano Estacado in the Desert High Plains. I'm outside of Amarillo in Canyon, Texas, in
Right
the
on.
belly of the beast of the cattle industry, the multinational cattle industry, actually. So.
And we have some informative things to talk about in this conversation. It was really important for me to get you on here once we connected because I find it to be one of the most important things in the world. A topic we talk about a lot in this podcast is just your own self-resilience, your own self-sufficiency, what you're capable of doing on your own versus what we're dependent on via the state or big corporate industries. And you work in the cattle industry, and red meat is a big part of human culture and has been for a long time. And as we'll get into today, it's an industry that's been kind of corrupted, I guess we'd say, over the years. And what ranching once was, it is no longer. But thanks to the Beef Initiative, which you are a big part of, we'll hopefully see some big changes in that over the years. So if you would like to start us off with just a little background about the big corporate beef industry and how it got you to where you are today.
Yeah, you know, it's, everything you just said is true. You know, from the beginning of time, we've been eating, oh, not that of time, but ever since we found red meat and fire, you know, our brains got bigger and our stomachs got smaller and we became more powerful as humans. And, right now there's a big attack on that. There's always been an attack on cows, either cattle rustling or, political, or, it's something that I think the true beef intelligence of any community is now under attack across the world. And this is what I've been doing the last 3.5 to 4 years, but really solidly the last 2 years. I've been on the road for, I've driven 150,000 miles across the United States, and I've been on two hemispheres and three continents. I've gone and I've surveyed and I've done reconnaissance across this world. There's an attack on beef, and but there's also a facilitation of more production of beef. And what I like to tell everybody, there's a global industrial shift when it comes to the beef industry and in the industrial food industry. People don't understand it. They don't see it coming. Where I come from, though, is kind of the belly of the beast of the multinational corporations. When I say that, I'm talking about processing centers. I'm talking about the packers. And in the United States right now, we have surrendered over, in my lifetime, the ability to process our cows to multinational corporations. 85% of our animal protein in the United States right now is controlled by four multinational corporations. They're not headquartered in the United States. So foreign national companies have control over 85% of our animal protein in the United States right now, and the general public does not understand that. When I said I come from the Llano Estacado, that's the panhandle of Texas. We are cattle country. We always have been. That's where we came to be, was because of cattle. And then it was the railroad, and it was cattle and the railroad. But definitively, where I come from is the epicenter of regeneration in, through thousands of years of soil, grass, and red meat. In the beginning, it was the bison. We had millions and millions of bison that roam the Great Plains, and I'm at the desert high plains, the southern tip of the Great Plains. And that's why they call it the Llano Estacado. It's a cap rock. It's the very end, and it swoops down into the rest of Texas. What we did in the cattle industry is there's been a consolidation during my lifetime, and I've been able to see that consolidation by corporations, and now they're multinational corporations. In the beginning, it was a consolidation of national corporations. One of those was Iowa Beef Packers, IBP. But whenever the multinationals came in and basically overtook, centralized, and consolidated the poultry and the hog industry in the United States, a lot of people don't realize that that has happened. But that's, you see the attack on dairy, you see the attack on poultry, you see the attack on pork. Chicken's not the same, pork's not the same. Well, now those multinational corporations are trying to consolidate the beef industry across this globe in the way they've done the pork and the poultry industries in the United States.
So
And
let's
so that
talk
will
about
lead
these
into.
attacks. What do you mean by these attacks on the poultry, on the pork, on the beef?
Well, when I say attack, I mean they take it out of the community. Where we came from in the United States is we built our communities based on truth in food, purity of food and soil. That's why we were the best at creating and producing so much food, is that we had community-based systems that worked very well for the United States for hundreds of years. We innovated through technology and innovation with our food. And when I say attack, I mean we took basically the producer and the processor out of our communities. Therefore, we took that food intelligence out of our communities. And so when I say attack, is that they come in with all kinds of leverage, of monetary leverage, of lobbying, of legislation that they are able to go in there and do that lobbying to where it takes the control out of the community, hands it over into a bigger apparatus that we in the community, we in the United States, don't have control over now. And so they're taking our food sovereignty out of some of the most powerful communities in the United States, and they turn it over. Those decisions are being made overseas now or in South America. And that's what I mean by attack. It's like your food sovereignty should come from within, That's where it used to come from in the United States. Now it's coming from without. They're using our resources and shipping all those resources out of the community. That's an attack on our food sovereignty.
And so, does beef intelligence mean just the intelligence and knowledge and experience of the whole production process from raising cattle to processing it?
It comes into that. That's a category that you have to look at. You have to. Used to, we could trust our local communities because, how I was raised, we always had a freezer full of beef, right? And we also had a processing center right outside of town that processed that cow. That cow's whole life was right there where I grew up as well. It was very simple. We didn't really have to go in there and kind of look at it and judge it and point fingers at it. We knew the producers in our area. We knew that all the supermarkets. I had four supermarkets in a town of 5,000 people. Now, then I look at that. So every one of those supermarkets knew all the producers. And so we didn't have to know this level of beef intelligence. Now we need to know that, a consumer in the United States, they'll look at a label and it'll say property of the USA and they'll say USDA Prime, but it will not say country of origin. Why is that? Because they don't want you to know where that beef is coming from. You never will know. You'll never know where that beef is coming from. They will never put that in labeling in the United States because the multinational corporations that control that labeling, they won't allow that country of origin because they don't want you to know what country that is coming from. A lot of times they don't even know what country that cow came from or that cut of ribeye came from.
So the USDA Prime, whatever that sticker is, that doesn't even mean it's from the USA, huh?
No, it means what happened. It says property. This is what happens. I call it just for the sake for people to visualize it. I call it the Brazilian cattle drive. Cows will be born and basically started out in South America. Throughout its lifetime, it'll make it up either through shipping, through rail, through barges. There's a lot of ways they ship cattle across this globe now. It'll end up in the United States. It'll stay for about a month, maybe 3 months in the United States, sometimes only a couple weeks. It'll get processed in a, let's say, a processing center outside of San Antonio, Texas. Well, now it's property of the USA. So that's what they say is, well, this is the property of the USA. It really didn't do anything in the USA. It got processed. And therefore, USDA says, and I'm not one of those guys that's going to attack the USDA. We have to have the USDA, but we have to have a tighter regulation of the USDA. And this is what the Beef Initiative is also doing. But going back to that, it's like this is how they circumvent around the general lack of understanding of what is going on with our food. And they manipulate everybody's trust of the past and how people trust labels. And we've got to have a new form of beef intelligence saying, I'm not going to buy that from you, supermarket, because you can't even tell me where it's coming from. Your USDA, well, I trust the Beef Initiative. It has a better set of protocols to let me know. I don't even want to know country of origin. I want to know rancher of origin. And that's what I came up with when I came up with the Beef Initiative.
So when we talk about discernment, like if I'm at the supermarket and I see the different brands or the different packaging of meat, what in your opinion is what are the biggest factors of why we should or shouldn't buy certain meat? For example, is it the food they're eating? Does it affect not just like the taste and tenderness of the meat, but also the health, the nutrition in it? What are the results on the consumers by these big monopolies?
Well, we'll just touch on that today. That's a podcast within itself. But the best way to look at this, ever since 1971, when we went off the gold standard, we had to create new ways of basically monetizing agriculture. And that's whenever we went into monocropping, we went big or we went home. We went really huge with the type of seeds we were growing, the type of crops we were growing. A lot of those crops now in the United States are commodity crops that feed commodity agriculture. They feed feed basically the herd or the property of the multinational systems as far as the cattle. If you're going the commodity route within cattle, then you're going to be eating commodity grains. Those commodity grains are usually genetically modified. They're raised with herbicides, pesticides. There's a lot of inputs to the grain. There's a lot of modification to that grain. There's a lot of modification to the soil. There's a lot of modification to the cow. The cows are going to get certain because they're going to go through feed yards, which is highly populated herds that are in a very concentrated area. So you're going to have different types of antibiotics used on that type of cow. You're going to have different types of steroids, growth steroids, perhaps. You're just going to have a lot of more inputs into that cow. You're going to have a lot more inputs into that grain. At the end, it's making subpar. I'm not saying it's bad all across the board, and I don't like to generalize like that, like the general public has to do a lot of times. What I did with the Beef Initiative is we were going to redefine where we came from. We came from letting the cows be land tools on the soil that they walked. They regrow soil by grazing grass. They are forage animals. And so, if you can get a regenerative cow and you can basically take it through a regenerative process, meaning organic, meaning clean, no genetically modified, no herbicides, pesticides, no antibiotics. And you can take that cow out of that system of commodity system that goes into the multinational processing and packers, then that beef that you're going to get is going to be far better. I don't even really compare the product of our beef and the Beef Initiative to supermarket beef too many more. There's too many touch points. There's too many inputs to the cow, to the soil. We've come too far away from where we came from as a nation, and the quality of beef that they took away from us, that protocol of steering that land and that animal, I don't even compare it anymore. I will not buy supermarket beef. And this is not an attack on the ranchers. You can have a damn good rancher that'll take a cow from day one, and he will have to sell that cow at auction. That cow then goes to the feed yard. It's owned by the multinational corporations right there at the auction. Okay, he has no say so in what happens. He did a good job right here. That multinational corporation might only own that cow for a week, but he could do antibiotics, steroids, grains that producer didn't do, but the multinational did, that takes it through that multinational processing center that is the distribution route into the supermarkets. And whenever you get to that large amount of, let's say 5,000 head a day get harvested, nobody knows where that cow came from. And that's where everybody, gets confused about market access. What was the lifespan of that cow? Who had it where? And that's where you get into, well, we need validation. We need verification. And the way that you get away from that is through the processing centers. You make sure that your cows are not processed through a multinational processing center. That's
Whew.
the bottleneck.
Wow. So the Bitcoiner in me is really interested in how the shift from the gold standard triggered this shift in the monetization tactics of the industry. But I think that's probably another podcast as well.
It is.
I think this could be a good segue into regenerative ranching and what the Beef Initiative does.
Sure. Whenever I say regenerative ranching, I really think about how my grandfather, raised animals and grew his soil and took care of his soil. He did it in a regenerative way to where the soil and the grass and the forage and the animals could regenerate together. They're all of a system. He didn't even know how to pronounce the word chemical, right? He really didn't. And he didn't ever use chemicals. He used seven dust. That was one chemical he used, but that's been around for a long time. But he was a regenerative farmer and rancher. That's what he did. It was all natural. It was clean. It was just letting the earth do the earth, letting the animals do the animals. They are the land tools. He took care of them. He let them do their jobs. And then we honored them, and they had one bad day. And then here they are. We're having them for dinner. Okay, regenerative now, everybody's like, oh, I want grass-fed beef. I've never met a cow that didn't eat grass. All cows are grass-fed. And so that's another manipulation that they've thrown at us. Regenerative farming and ranching basically means what kind of inputs are you giving to the soil and into that cow? And if you're doing it clean, no chemicals, no genetically modified organisms with your seed or your cows. And if it's a clean route, that's why I always tout right now, my marketing plan moving forward is going to be the cleanest beef in the nation. I don't even have to say regenerative anymore. It's just clean, man. You don't have a lot of inputs that have polluted it. And but to the general public's understanding, grass-fed and grass-finished beef is really declared regenerative. I've got ranchers. I sell beef that is grass-finished and organic grain finished, grass-fed organic grain finished. And so, organic grains, cows have been eating grains ever since the beginning of time too. It's nothing new. We did not introduce cows eating commodity grain in the 1970s. Ever since biblical times, cows were led upon the wheat farm or the wheat fields to forage wheat. So they've been eating grains for a long time. What kind of grains are they eating? That's a regenerative stance that you need to make and understand what that means. It's basically clean. Is it genetically modified? Did they use herbicides and pesticides? Clean beef means regenerative beef. Regenerative beef means clean beef in the Beef Initiative.
When I hear regenerative anything really in the realm of, I guess, agriculture, ranching, any kind of food production, I think of how the cycle of nature is a bit more, I guess, acknowledged and followed. So here where I live, we do a lot of composting. Everything that's, from an organic material, we throw in the compost. I mean, or we feed to the chickens, but either way, it leads to the same result where the chicken poop turns into fertilizer, the compost turns into healthy soil that I can then use to plant food. So it closes the cycle, as we say.
It
So when I
really is.
hear it, what is this similar in regenerative ranching where that, like the cow manure, for example, does it go back into the soil to make the soil healthier?
100%. Let's get back to the beginning where I come from. I talked about the bison, in the Great Plains. What they would do is they would graze, an area and move on. And the Native Americans followed the herds throughout that lifestyle of 12-month, seasons, 4 seasons in 12 months. And that's what the bison did. They would graze and move as the seasons moved on. And within for regenerative farming and ranching now, there's a lot of ranchers that will put their chicken, their basically their poultry out on a pasture, let them hit that first, right? And then they come and then they sometimes they put goats, sheep, but there's a cycle of these animals, these ruminant animals that'll come in, fertilize the ground with their manure or their waste, and then the cows come in. And basically graze off of that forage, and then they'll just repeat that cycle. So yeah, you're 100%, man. You use the manure as fertilizer. That's what fertilizer really is in a natural way. But we turn fertilizer, we turn bombs into fertilizer in the 50s, and then we didn't look back from there. So.
And I believe do, farming, ranching in that way is also carbon negative, I believe, if I
100%.
remember
Oh, by
correctly. Even
far.
and so the whole attack on eating meat or whatever over the last couple years is like saying it's bad for the climate, when in reality the way that we've raised cattle has been bad for the climate. I remember I'm from California originally. Every time we drive up the five past like Fresno, a little bit before there, you just smell the cows for miles. Yeah, you've windows up, everything, like you just smell it. And you look at all those cows cooped up, like trapped, and you're like, this can't be good for anyone.
Yeah, no, and it's funny you bring that up because what it because I grew up every morning. I mean, I grew up smelling cow shit, and in the saying where I grew up, all the cowboys there they say, "Hey man, that's just the smell of money," and it is because it was a concentration of bullshit is what it was, cow shit. And so, it's there, and that's a great point. Is it's the cows are not the hazard. It's the way the multinational corporations have basically consolidated the operation of the cattle industry. They're attacking themselves. And see, that's the propaganda. That's the psyop. That's the gotcha that the general public doesn't understand. Is like, okay, we've pushed this too far. This form of animal production and processing and distribution, we milked it dry. And now what we're going to do is we're going to insert some new fake commodities, replace animal protein. And just like they did in the 70s, when we went off the gold standard, they started injecting fake food commodities into our food systems: seed oils, rapeseed, canola oil, soy. Boom, 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 boom. They just started knocking it out. And I'm a child of the 70s. Man, we were eating Sizzling and TV dinners and soy burgers and everything. And they were advertising and it was on the radio, it was on TV. And it was just a blitz of all these new fake commodities in the 70s. Well, that was because of what, and that's whenever I talk about a global industrial food shift. That's what we're facing, folks. And they're going to take more animal protein out of our market access, and they'll insert different types of vegetable protein, everything that they're growing in the labs, and you'll eat it and you won't even know you're eating it. And that's what people don't understand. Because right now, you don't know what you're eating when you're eating at a fast food restaurant and you're eating a
Oh
fast food
boy.
hamburger. I mean, come on, man. Taco Bell's already had to defend themselves for decades for serving dog food. And people, it's not dog food. Well, yeah, it is. It's the same products that they use in dog food. And
Well, I
so.
think I just for anyone listening that isn't aware of these seed oils and canola oil and all that, the research how it I think the original purpose was like lubricant for machinery.
It was. It runs
And
good in my
then
truck. That's what I run in my truck right now, is seed
yeah,
oils.
they figured out how to get the government to make it legal to eat. I don't know the exact story off the top of my head, but
Well,
and then
I'll give
now
it to you
essentially,
real quick.
all right.
Okay, 1956, the FDA outlawed rapeseed as being hazardous for human consumption because it would kill you because it had this form of acidity in it and it was toxic. So they learned how to modify the seed and to take the, I guess, the poison out of the seed, and they industrialized it in a way to where, oh, look, it's not poisonous anymore. Now we can inject it into every food product known to man. And that's what they've done.
Yeah, it's
And
scary.
think about canola oil, rapeseed. It's a beautiful plant. It's a beautiful weed. It has wonderful blossoms, and they've actually created a new tourism around it. Same people that are taking pictures of cherry blossoms across the world are now touring rapeseed fields. And so this is once again the propaganda that they put in front of people's faces that people don't know where to make that judgment. It's like, what's going on here? Think about the hundreds of millions of dollars canola oil makes just being inserted into, let's say, I
Everything.
don't know, everything. Yeah, one item. Think how much profit, how much yield they make off of that. And so that happened, started happening in the 70s.
Yeah, and that's some scary stuff.
It
So
is.
let's talk about the Beef Initiative. What does it do and how does it solve these problems created by this big four, the packing industry?
Well, I mean, if I was listening to me for the first time, I would say, man, this is too much information. I don't know. I'm going to go away. We're done. Glossy-eyed, we're gone. What I tell people is quit validating the deceptions. If you can accept that the food sucks now, because it does, I mean, we're metabolically destroyed as a nation. The Beef Initiative was founded with one thing: to get back to where we came from through relationships building with the people that want to feed you, that do it the right way. And that takes building a relationship with those people, not a relationship with the multinational corporation through a labeling process and through a supermarket distribution system. We don't validate that anymore. I don't even act like it exists. What we've got is a business model that is built around going back to where we came from. Basically, knowing where your food comes from. and establishing relationships and empowering the rancher producer in the United States. Because I mean, I had three emails today, folks, from people that are closing up shop. This consolidation and centralization is happening, and it's going to go and consolidate and put all these small producers out of business. 40% of our ranch land in the United States is now gone forever. And that happened in a very short period of time. And it's about to ramp up on steroids. There's going to be a shift. And we will quit having market access to quality beef in the United States. They will turn it into caviar. That's their plan. And it's a long-term plan. It's a 10-year plan. But they've got about 5 years on us. They're moving forward really hard. What the Beef Initiative really does is gives the great American rancher a voice again. That voice that was stolen whenever they took those processing centers out of the communities, they took the voice of the rancher. Nobody even knows how to contact a rancher anymore. Most ranchers, producers have to build a website that costs tens of thousands of dollars. They have to pay Google tens of thousands of dollars just to get seen. And we eliminate that. We decentralize communications. We give the rancher a digital voice that they've never had. A lot of people have to sell their product through Facebook Marketplace, the amount of censorship. So we eliminate all of the nefarious communication censorship, the lack of a digital voice that they've never had, and we get people back to the community building that they need to be doing these days. Beef Initiative is a relationship building communities, and basically saving ranchers and letting them lead and educate a public that is very confused right now. And we're bridging that gap between consumer and rancher. The rancher does not know that there's people looking for him. They think that they're being attacked. They don't think the general public even respects them anymore, because that's what they see every night on the nightly news. Consumers do not know how to go out there and find them. So we bridge that gap. We bridge the gap with decentralized podcasts, with the Beef Initiative, with marketing plans, with me traveling around the world, me going out there being Texas Slim. We started with three producers in our index at beefinitiative.com. Now we've got close to 200. And all those ranchers, producers came in there voluntarily. Once they get into the Beef Initiative, they basically get found and they start establishing relationships with those people that are local that want them to basically support them and feed them. So.
So the Beef Initiative is a decentralized it's a network, but it's a platform that connects people that want to consume quality beef and they want to know where it comes from. It connects those people to the producers of said beef. And they can sign up right then and there. I believe I saw subscription packages, right? It's not like you just buy a steak, you sign up to get it delivered.
Well, you can do a lot of things. The best way to do this and to look at this is that we in the Beef Initiative sell beef, because there's a lot of people that might not have a producer close to them. So you can buy beef from the Beef Initiative. We have me, Texas Slim's Cuts, which is a partnership with Hometown Meats and K&C Cattle out of Austin, Texas. We also have K&C Cattle. Cole Bolton was the first one to ever basically sell beef through the Beef Initiative. We innovated together. We also have Holy Cow. We're bringing in a lot more producers that are going to sell beef boxes through the Beef Initiative. But the one thing that I think everybody really needs to focus on is our index, our searchable index. We want you to reach out and try to find somebody local first. And if you can't, then you can buy from us and we'll ship it to you. We'll ship it to you a la carte or a box. We've got so many different variations. It's up to you to decide what's best for you.
Yeah, I was thinking about that for me because I don't think there's any producers in Hawaii. Right,
We
not
need
yet.
some. Then that's the bad thing though, because we ship 48 states. We can't ship to Alaska and Hawaii because of the
Right,
shipping czars,
exactly.
of course, you know. But yeah, we need Hawaii. People don't understand. Hawaii's got amazing beef industry in Hawaii. They basically have been doing this for thousands of years in Hawaii. You know, there's so much that Hawaii could really bring to the table within the Beef Initiative. It will just take one or two producers to get them in there and get people talking about them. That's what happens.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but are there processing, is there a microprocessing center here Because I've heard.
there's probably is, but there's something we need to look closer at.
Because I know there's a local beef brand here, and I've heard some kind of like bizarre stories about how like the beginning, they say it's born and raised and everything here, but then I think in the beginning of their life, they send them to California to get fattened up on some grains. Then they send them back, and then they send them back to get processed. So when they're older, like they don't even process them here. This is what I've heard. I don't know if it's true or not, but if it is, then there's a big hurdle to cross. But anyway, the next thing I have on my list is how does Bitcoin play into this?
Well, let's look at 1971, man. What happened? What the fuck happened in 1971? Well, we debased the dollar, right? Okay. If we debase the dollar, don't you think everything that had quality at that time got debased? I've talked about how we debased our food supply, right? We debased it by inserting a lot of fake commodities that have no nutritional value into our system. That's why we're metabolically bankrupt as a nation now. And so you look at how that happened. Well, our monetary system is debased. The dollar has been devalued. Well, I asked in the very beginning, I'll go up to ranchers. I say, hey, where's the value of the cow? I know where the value of the cow's been ever since, in the beginning of time, and especially in Texas. I mean, we created the cattle industry in the United States for the most part, and the value of the cow used to be in the cow. And then the value of the cow kind of switched over to the land, but now the value of the cow is in the USDA insurance policy. Well, that USDA insurance policy is nothing based except on the debt economy. The United States basically functions on the debt economy. That's what we created after 1971. So there is no value of the cow. The value of the cow might be in the commodity grain that makes profits. So how much commodity grain does that cow? How many times is that cow used to make profit, for a multinational grain, chemical, pharmaceutical, processing packer company? Who's making money there? It's not the producer rancher. So in regenerative farming and rancher, we eliminate all of those guys I just said, because we don't need the multinational processing centers. We don't need the multinational grain companies or chemical companies or pharmaceutical companies. So we got some sovereignty going on here with regenerative farming and ranching, kind of like what my grandfather did. Well, my grandfather also, he traded to you face to face, peer to peer. And so what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is property. It's a store of value. It's a peer-to-peer transaction that nobody has to ask for permission. Don't have to worry about the banks. Don't have to worry about, anybody else stealing it from you. Producers and ranchers they know what property is. They know what ownership is. They know what accountability is. Everything that a rancher, regenerative farmer and rancher does is based on the Bitcoin ethos. That's what a lot of Bitcoiners don't understand. They've been Bitcoiners far, far before Bitcoin came along. And so, what a wonderful opportunity to marry the two, Bitcoin and beef. And so, I saw that because of how I was raised, that Bitcoin is property, it's a store of value, there's a ledger there. And what we can do is we can bridge this gap within the community and with the beef industry with Bitcoin. And, most people don't understand Bitcoin. We know that it's early. One thing the rancher does understand, and when I go talk to them and they say, yeah, would you educate me a little bit about Bitcoin? I said, how much you paying that credit card company every time you make a transaction when somebody comes and buys your beef from you? 3%, 4%. It's like, how would you like to eliminate that 3 to 4%? You don't even have to keep your money in Bitcoin. At that moment of transaction, you can keep that 3% that you would have paid to the banks, basically the credit card companies. Keep it in Bitcoin, use it as a store of value, and come back in a year and tell me how much money you've saved by using Bitcoin. You don't even have to keep that transaction in Bitcoin at that point in time. That's part of our technology stack. You can switch it over to fiat so you can run your business right now. But that 3%, man, that starts stacking up per transaction. That's DCA, that's dollar cost averaging. So you don't ask a rancher to buy Bitcoin, he wants to earn it. That's the best way that I found to adopt into the beef industry and the cattleman space is that, hey, let's become the bank again. That's what we used to be. A rancher used to be the bank. The store of the value of the cow was money. And
Right.
now it's not, it's debt. So let's take it back through this new technology that we control, that nobody else can tell us how to use it. It's verified. It's everything that we know that it is on the Bitcoin ledger, the ethos. It's how the rancher really wants to operate. And so it's our job at Bitcoiners to understand where the value is now, and where we're going to take the value of the cow and the value of Bitcoin to the rancher is. Where is it right now? Maybe it's just saving 3%, but I got a lot of ranchers that'll start 3%, and now they're up to 40% per transaction. There's their dollar cost averaging. But see, they get to make that decision. Nobody's dictating to them, not a USDA insurance policy and not the bank. That's the value of Bitcoin and beef right there, man. It's simple.
Well, there's beautiful symbolism there of bringing back the hard asset, the store of value, and
Right.
applying it to this kind of ancient traditional heritage that that we have here. And I say we as the collective human
Sure.
beef eaters. So, is Bitcoin the only payment method on the beef
Yes.
initiative?
No. Well, we got every fiat payment method, known to man as far as
Oh,
debt,
okay.
but as far as, yeah, you can do Apple Pay, you can do PayPal, you can do credit card. But no, we are a Bitcoin only company, and we will forever. Cryptocurrencies are shit coins. They're centralized psyops. They're pieces of shit. And if you go after a rancher talking crypto, man, you are working against him, and he doesn't need to hear that. He needs decentralization, and he needs true store value. He needs true ownership, not guesswork, not anybody that can control the value of that shit coin or anything like that. There'll be a time when technology seeps into agriculture that will be valid, that it's a good blockchain technology. Right now, the only thing that the rancher producer needs to know is there only is one blockchain, and that is Bitcoin.
So, what makes Beef Initiative a Bitcoin-only company?
But we will never entertain any other form of cryptocurrency.
Oh,
And
okay.
our business model is based on the Bitcoin ethos. Every bit
Gotcha.
of it. You can read it, and we follow that verbatim as much as we know how to at this point in time in the Bitcoin development and adoption and transformation. So we are decentralized as much as we can be right now. We have systems in place to where we can't be censored. We can't be turned off. We're redundant in certain ways. And so we have a good store of value of Bitcoin, and we're getting ranchers that are getting that same store of value in Bitcoin. And so that's why we're a Bitcoin-only company when it comes to cryptocurrencies. And I think there might be a time, and people, all the doomsday, the doomers out there and everything. Picture this whenever they, because what they're doing now, cow's a carbon hazard. You go, I was in Australia. You get judged now if you buy beef and it doesn't pass their carbon test. And so whenever, they've already introduced CBDC, I think today I saw something, CBDCs are coming, central bank digital currencies. What happens whenever they look at you and they're trying to control your monetary systems through CBDCs, but they're also looking at your consumption model and you're buying beef? You're not going to have it much as value in your monetary system, and they're going to flag you, and they will do it in real time. And then you'll all of a sudden stop eating beef because, man, it didn't pass their test. Well, you don't have to ask for permission whenever you use Bitcoin and whenever you're buying beef through the Beef Initiative. It's verified. It's a store of value. It's a peer-to-peer transaction. You know the rancher's getting it. You know where basically that beef come from. It's rancher of origin. We don't have to have a bunch of bullshit laws and regulations around our beef, and we never will. We're based on authenticity and transparency, and we will forever be that way.
So you're allowing these ranchers to eliminate the middlemen and essentially keep their business going despite any bullshit the state controlled actors might throw their way.
That's a good point because everybody thinks that we have to play this big collective game. across this planet with the WEF, the IMF, the WHO, the USDA, everybody, you know, all this collective. We don't have to. We know the law better than the law enforcers know it sometimes within processing, within USDA, within the beef industry. And so there's a lot of things you don't have to participate in. mRNA vaccines in cattle, it's never happened in the United States. Is it going to happen? Don't know. Our ranchers will never allow it. They will never have to because they're not in that commodity system, that linear commodity system that they have to answer to all these multinational corporations. We don't answer to them anyway, so we don't have to participate. We don't have to validate all the fear point. We don't have to validate all this. And we stay in tune with legislation. We've got Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance. We've got all kinds of people, law, nonprofit law firms that help, ranchers. We know what's going on. We're not raising red flags right now. We're telling people to quit paying attention to all the fear porn that they're pumping you and get out there and establish your own market access in your own food supply systems now. This is the greatest opportunity in my lifetime to do something like the Beef Initiative. And people need to start understanding that. If you're that afraid, well, quit paying attention to it. Quit validating all of the stuff, the nefarious bullshit, and go out there and empower yourself with a great relationship with somebody that's going to be there for you. And then you can help raise their family by your consumption model, because that's what and they want to educate you. You know, you're going to get healthier, you're going to get happier, you're going to have better friends.
And this is a great analogy, not just for the beef realm. Personal sovereignty starts with taking control of your own perception and deciding you're just going to do you from what you know is right. And obviously everyone has their own moral compass, but it's pretty consistent that humans have it. And when we shut off the TV, when we shut off the fear porn, we can start to align our own thoughts with that moral compass, with our hearts, with our passions, and we can start to follow, who we are, which in general is a collective community, help each other out, do things like, what do we say in the Bitcoin world? Provide value, provide value and everything else will take care of itself, right? Just provide value,
right?
Provide value to others. And that's essentially free market capitalism, or it's what it should be, which is just everyone providing value to others. And then the wealth you accumulate will reflect that to an extent. But
real quick on the Bitcoiners real quick. And I haven't used this. I let somebody tell me first before I took the liberty of saying this. But if you're a real Bitcoiner, what's one of our biggest mottos? Don't trust, verify.
Verify.
And then I go and say, hey, what'd you have for breakfast, man? Tell me what you had for breakfast. Did you verify every bit of that substance that you consumed? Nah, very few
Hell
people
no.
can say that. Hell no. So if you're going to be a hypocrite, well, keep on, but you better start verifying, man, before you trust, if you're going to have that next meal. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's a mindset. You got to go.
It's a mindset.
Man, I don't have a problem eating. I just went around this world and I ate like a king. And it's not meaning that I ate a bunch of just exotic food, man. I could always find beef on this planet. I did it in Asia, did it in Australia, do it here every day in the United States. I don't go to supermarket. I get a few things, staples at the supermarket. We have to do that. And that's what we used to do. We used to just go in there and get a few things. Our staples were given to us or they were shopped to us by the producers themselves. And so take a different perspective. You know, I'm not a hypocrite. I go to supermarkets, but I guarantee you I can live without them. I don't need them. And if people will take that stance and quit even acting like a supermarket exists, what would you do? The supermarket wasn't here, what would you do? Well, you'd go out there and find your damn food supply, wouldn't you?
You'd
get the engineer. Yeah. Do it now, except maybe on down the road when everybody's trying to do this shit. You know, look at COVID, man. That was a big old eye-opener. That was a wake-up call with food systems. We have a global, basically, supply chain system that is now wars will be fought over it because you have BRICS, you have, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South America, creating a new Silk Road across this planet, man. Supply chain lines are going to change. Supply chain lines will be cut off based on political maneuvering. I don't want to participate in that anymore, man. I'm going to eat food that comes from this soil right here. It's going to make me happier and healthier, and I'm going to have a new sense of empowerment. I tell everybody that gets a half a side of beef or something like that, I say, you'll wake up in the middle of the night and go open up that freezer and just stare at it because it gives you a new sense of empowerment. And it's true. And it's a power move right now if you take action. Just act like, all this multinational and all this centralized food system doesn't exist as much as you can. And then see what happens. Your life improves. It's real easy.
Yeah, we have a lot more freedom to opt out than we're often conditioned to believe, and it takes time to recondition ourselves to realize that we have this much power. And obviously we're speaking as to, you people from the United States. So maybe that luxury of freedom isn't as available everywhere. But here we are, and we do have this power to opt in of our own personal doubt. We do have the power to reclaim as much as we can all sovereignty and the authority over our own lives. And so however small it needs to start, we should be doing it. We need to be doing it. And
Why
that's why
wouldn't
it's a
you?
big Yeah, well, because it's hard work, or it's uncomfortable, or it's extra work. That's why people wouldn't do it.
Well, then I guess time management needs to be looked at in our lives because, when did food become a convenience? Food is not convenience, man. Food is survival. Quit treating it like convenience. And that, yeah. And so live your lifestyle, create a lifestyle that's not the food shopping network, that's not, the food channel on cable TV. This is about really going out there, reestablishing market access to a new way of life. And that's what the Beef Initiative was really founded upon. I'm tired of the bullshit. And I don't really have to. I was in corporate America. I was a research analyst. I worked in telecommunications. I walked away from all that shit. I had a good tenure. I've lived a very good life. I have a fascinating life. But one thing that I know for sure, as an individual, as a man, things have changed and they changed for the wrong reasons. And basically this sense of complacency, this confirmation bias, this lack of entitlement or this false sense of entitlement that we have as people. Hell no, I don't want any part of that, man. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna honor my ancestors, man. They did something right. And so it's time for us to reflect and take a pause, especially as men and women, as mothers and fathers. Our consumption model as a nation now is killing kids. I have doctors in the Beef Initiative telling me what they're seeing from kids that are eating food that is based on an adult consumer demand that is stewarded and engineered by an adult consumption model. Put that into your mind and think about that. What do you tell a kid that's 14 years old that has fatty liver disease and all he's ever done is ate what was given to him by his parents? This is happening across the United States. It's time to wake up. And if you're looking how to be a man or a true woman, well, man, this is easy. Get your ass into the Beef Initiative and change your market access and your understanding of what food is and what survival is and what independence is, what freedom is, what empowerment is, what happiness is, what relationship building is. We have such a division of interpersonal communication in this nation, and that's happened in the last 20 something years with the digital technology that we're using right now. We don't know how to have relationships with the right people anymore.
But there does seem to be a revolution happening in that regard,
There
just as
is.
we discussed before we hit record. Here we are, different sides of the world, talking to people, sharing information, sharing insights, tips on these super important facets of life in order to take back control.
And that's the beautiful thing about it. You know, we're using digital technology as the tool that it should be used for. We're communicating in a way that you and I would never have communicated before. You know, whenever I was, you know, 15 years ago, you and I would have never have met. But this is turning into a very positive thing. You're a world traveler. You and I have a lot of the same similarities. You know, I'm a freaking world traveling vagabond, hippie punk cowboy, man. You know, I love walking the earth, and you know, you do the same. I mean, you've been to places, and I'm gonna go to more places, but I'm gonna use the technology in the right way, not for a dopamine hit every couple of seconds. You know, I don't watch TV, haven't watched it in years. I don't listen to audio or video commercials. I don't listen to no, nothing gets through these ears unless I really want it to. And if it does, it just snuck on by. And
You
so
gotta
that way
filter it out.
we have to filter things. Nobody gave us a manual on how to use this technology. And the people that engineer the technology know this. I know because I was part of that. I know when they found out about dopamine, about that like button. I know whenever they expanded broadband and had 2 to 3 devices in a household, and then they went to 10 to 12 overnight, and they got Johnny in his room, and Jill in her room, Dad in his room, and Mom in her room, and the family was divided within the house. And that happened.
It's
We
even worse
predicted it in
now.
telecommunications. Oh, of course it is. Yeah. We predicted it in telecommunications. We engineered. When I was in telecommunications, we went into people's households. This is funny. We would give them a year's worth of free HBO, and AT&T would go into their households and do behavior analysis on how the family treated technology and what they viewed and how they viewed it. Man, they got all the money in the world to research you. We've been lab rats since day one, and a lot of people don't understand this. And it's time to wake up. It is.
Well, how can people find you online and learn more?
Well, you know, hopefully you and I collaborate a lot more, and we get a lot more, you know, production quality out of the podcast that we've done, stuff like that. This podcast, hopefully, it's really good. Best way to go right now and forever is beefinitiative.com. It's going to tell you the why, the
Beefinitiative.com.
what, and the how starting on Monday. Beefinitiative.com. Sign up for the Substack. It's texasslim.substack.com. But you can do both those things just by going to beefinitiative.com. And if you want to catch some of our podcast, go to YouTube or Podcasting 2.0 Fountain app. It doesn't matter. Just do a search. I am Texas Slim Podcast. And I've done over 200 podcasts in the last 2 years. And so I've done 130 of them through Beef Initiative Podcast, through Texas Slim's Vision, and now I am Texas Slim. There's plenty of content to get caught up. And if you're just starting your food intelligence journey, go to the Substack and read The Harvest of Deception. That's where you start.
Sovereign states of mind.